Good morning, everyone. This is a reading from Whispers from Eternity, a book of prayer demands, written by Paramahansa Yogananda and edited by his disciple, Swami Kriyananda. Sorry, I had the page marked, but I'm just looking for which demand I actually wanted to send out to God this morning. This is prayer demand number 23 for removing the cork of ignorance. No more shall my consciousness remain bottled in this little vessel of flesh corked with ignorance. No more will I remain moving through the sea of cosmic consciousness, night and day, years, decades, and how many incarnations, so close, yet never able to contact thy sea. Through the bursting vibration of cosmic sound and the surging of thy holy name, I have removed the cork of ignorance which so long separated me from thee. Though we live together so closely, it separated me from thee. Now, my body consciousness will meet thy all-surrounding, all-pervading consciousness. No longer will I walk heedlessly in thee, but never knowing and feeling thee. Thine image within me shall meet thine image everywhere. By releasing the I-ness in me, I will know that I am thou, and that thou alone art the little egos of us all. In all fairness to myself, all four of them on the page were perfect. This morning I played a little game. I said, let me just open to the perfect Whispers reading for this morning. And I did. I opened to that one. But then I said to myself, what's wrong with you? Any Whispers that you would have read this morning would have been perfect. They're all about how are we going to find God? So it was just a little game I played, but suddenly it seemed to matter. Yesterday, when I was looking through Swami Kriyananda's interpretation of the Bhagavad Gita, I found a beautiful line that he wrote that related to the stanzas that we read this morning, that Lahari read. And it's very much what he says in the reading, but very succinctly, he said, every thought that is uplifted to the Lord will be purified and strengthened over time. Every thought that is uplifted to the Lord will be purified and strengthened over time. It was very helpful for me. I realized that, you know, every year we go through these 52 readings like we had this morning, a reading from the Bible, a reading from the Bhagavad Gita, and we read Swamiji's commentary on them, which really helps us to have the experience of what Jesus and Krishna were saying. So we've heard these two readings many times, and I've probably spoken on them at least several times, if not many, in the past. What I realized when I read that yesterday is that because it feels so cozy, what Krishna is saying, so utterly reassuring, that, and it's not written exactly like this, and I don't have the reading from Ray's right here, but the interpretation of that last line is, and if in this thy faint heart fails. Bring me thy failures. So Krishna walks us through, and I do want to find the exact line, so give me a moment. Cling thou to me, he says. Clasp me with heart and mind. So shalt thou dwell surely with me on high. So he gives us, this is how you will dwell surely with me on high. Cling thou to me. Clasp me with heart and mind. This is how you do it. And the comparable biblical reading is, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy mind, with all thy soul, and with all thy strength. And we say that every week in the festival, and I've read this Gita reading many times. And yesterday when I read that line, the way Swamiji describes it in his other commentary, where he said, every thought that is raised up to the Lord shall be purified and strengthened over time, I realized that instead of focusing on the first stanza from the Gita reading, I sort of often ended and loved, bring me thy failures. It felt much more like what I might be doing, what I might be able to do. And I saw that reading from the Gita is very much like our astral spine. That, I mean, it's a beautiful line, and it says, God is not judging us. God isn't blaming us. God really knows us, maybe more than we'd like to think at times, because, as Swamiji said in the reading here, we often don't want to show our failures. We're really afraid. We think we can hide them. We actually think we can hide them, as if God himself isn't seeing, and not even calling them failures. God's actually seeing them as the effort we're making. He's seeing them completely without any judgment. This is where you are. I see you. If we could hear God all the time, we'd hear him say, it's okay. There's no judgment there. It's not like it's bad, but we, as human beings, we bring that in. We think they're failures. We think we'll be judged. What God's saying is, through Krishna, in this Gita, it's not in the failures, it's in the bring them to me. It's wherever you are, whatever you can do right now, offer it to me, because every thought that's offered to the Lord will be purified and strengthened over time. So Krishna's just saying, it's in the intention. And then I realized, as I was saying, this is just like our astral spine, that wherever we are, as we read, if we read this from the last line in the stanza to the first, it would be, bring me what you're calling your failures, or dedicate every act to me, or work for me, serve me in your work. And then when we're up here, cling thou to me. And I thought to myself, don't let yourself linger with your consciousness down there for too long. The line that Swamiji has in this reading, where he says, it requires an act of will to offer that awareness up to the light and to hold it there until one's inner darkness is completely dispelled. It does. It takes effort. It takes willingness. It takes knowing how much these avatars love us, how much they want us wherever we are. They know we're not all saints. They know what it takes to become a saint. We know, of course. That's why we remember the saints and we talk about them. But they're saying, every one of you has within you that ability to become that perfect self. And we are going to show you the way, no matter where you are. In the most loving way, both Jesus, who said, believe in me. He said, those who believe in me will come to me. Meaning, those who know where they're headed, who know where they're trying to go, who are willing to face the challenges along the way, who are willing to come up against whatever in themselves they need to. Jesus says, believe in me. Krishna says, just keep coming to me wherever you are. Right in these two readings, all the love in the world, little bit of a different language sent by avatars of different times, but nonetheless calling to us. I was thinking about the line that we sing every week, long we feared to face your love, lest our emptiness it prove. And somehow yesterday I felt that line and I knew it in a way that all the years of singing it, just what it means that we lose our courage to really come to God, or that act of will that it would take to come up against what is so much a part of the human condition. We can't help it. It's part of the life that we live, that indifference that we can find in ourselves, that we see so often either ourselves or other people who aren't even ready to make the effort, the way that we experience doubt or negativity. It does. It takes a great act of will, as Swamiji said, to keep facing that. This is when I read this last night, I was so reminded of Sister Gyanamata, who was, as many of us know, Paramahansa Yogananda's most highly evolved female disciple. I got caught up last night in reading the book, God Alone, particularly the first part. Well, the whole book is extraordinary. First, it tells a little bit about her life. Then it shares a lot of the letters that she wrote to the other disciples, because that's what Yogananda asked her to do. And then, so touchingly, a lot of his letters to her are shared. They just had such a dear relationship. You could feel in it every human and divine quality come together. She just writes him like a little girl. She's this great being. Oh, wait a minute, she says. I said this line to you, and I realized later, maybe you thought I didn't want to work hard anymore. I need to write you immediately. I can't bear the thought that you would think that I don't want to work. So sweet. She knows, we know, he knew. He knew every thought in her mind. But she just, they just related on all these levels. But there is this wonderful story that one of the other nuns told, that Sister Gyanamata had a lot of physical suffering in her life, and particularly in the years that she was with Master. She basically lived in chronic pain, but she never attended to that pain. She always attended to living life fully for God in so many ways. Everything's a lesson. everything. There, I won't forget the story that I'm headed to tell you, but this other story just came to mind. There were so frequently a lot of visitors at the Hermitage where she lived most of the time. And Master would ask all of the nuns if they would give up their rooms for these visitors. And of course, everyone said yes, and they all went to sleep wherever they slept. Nobody ever knew where Sister Gyanamata slept. They could never find her. She would always give up her room, and they would say, "Sister, he didn't mean you." She was older, and she had this chronic pain, but she always insisted. And one day, this is years into it, they said to her, "Where do you go?" And she said, "I open the army cot, and I sleep in the laundry room." And it was one of those hard, really, like many of us would find it impossible to sleep on army cots. And it was a joy to her. It was all a way to serve God and to raise every thought, feeling, and action into the light, everything that she could do. So she was laying in bed one day, and there was another nun in the room with her. And this nun says, "Master Yogananda called on the intercom, and he asked if Sister Gyanamata could come and do something for him." And Sister, who was laying there in the bed, heard this other sister begin to explain that she was really having a hard day. And in her mind, she was about to say, "Maybe somebody else could come and do it." And Sister yells out, "Say yes and make it snappy," just like that, to the nun. So of course the nun did. And the next day, Sister Gyanamata called the other nun in, and she said, "I want to tell you why I said that and why I will always say that." And she said, "I say yes to Master no matter what he asks. Maybe tomorrow I'll have to figure out how to make it happen. But always, under all circumstances, say yes." And she added again, "And make it snappy." Isn't that just, it's just so remarkable. It encompasses our whole path. Now, it doesn't mean that we get dishonest with ourselves. It means that we, wherever we are, we begin to practice right now saying yes to God. Whenever we can, we begin to practice the minute we turn our energy into yes, I will, not I can't, I don't feel well. And again, we can't mistake this, because there really are times when we simply can't do things. Again, God knows where we are, who we are. He knows exactly where on this long climb up this spiral staircase we are. But our job is to simply look for the next way to grow, the next step that we can take on our path, and give it what we have, always knowing that God is not here to judge us. He's here to encourage us. He will never ask more of us than what we can give. But it brings to mind another story. I opened the book God Alone last night, and there you have it. It's all about Sister Gyanamata today. Before she came to Master, when she was much younger, she said she was about to face a challenge that she knew was going to be very difficult. And she sat down to pray about it. And she said instantly she felt God was telling her that he would not take this challenge away. It was hers. It was right for her to go through it. And she says, "But then he told me the prayer that I could pray that he could respond to. Those are her words, almost exactly. He gave me the prayer, she said. And the prayer was, change not my circumstance, but change me. What a beautiful prayer, because that says to God, offering it to God, change me in a way that I can meet this challenge, and then the next challenge, and then the next one. God is there to encourage us, not to judge us. And he doesn't mind if we fail, not at all. Over and over, last night, I was looking at readings where Yogananda kept saying, a time of any failure is such a great moment to plant the seeds of success. Or that line of his, a saint is a sinner who never gave up. So it's not our failures that God minds. It's not whatever we're doing along the way. This is why that line in the Gita is just so beautiful, the way, excuse me as I look for it again. No, Swamiji does use exactly that line from that interpretation of the Gita, but where he says, if in this thy faint heart fails, bring me thy failures. Meaning, whatever you are, wherever you are. And again, that's an interpretation. You know, Krishna didn't actually use the word failure. And I think we need to be careful, because in our human mind, we think of judgment, we think of blame, we think we can fail. And really, in God's eyes, in every moment, even when you think you've done the most horrible thing in the world, which is how Swamiji begins to interpret this reading, how many times in my own life I've been pained by something that I felt was so awful. Even last week, it happened to me. I'll share a story. We have these book study meetings that we have every Monday night. And some time ago, the woman, lovely, great soul, who I've known for years, was leading our book study that night. And she decided to have us all break down into groups and to answer certain questions and to discuss it, and then to have a representative stand up and share with the whole group. Perfectly wonderful thing to do, except I hate that. I have an aversion to it. I always have. I don't like having to be in little groups and talk. And it felt to me, my mistake, because again, in hindsight, what she did was beautiful, but it felt so intellectual to me. And I was, in me, wanting people to feel the meaning of the reading of the book we were studying. This is all in my mind. Everybody else, it turns out, in the whole group, probably 12 or 14 of us, was thoroughly enjoying it. I saw that later, but I was so negative. It's embarrassing. I could imitate myself. It was like, okay, maybe, all right, I have nothing to say. I mean, can you imagine what that felt like in the room? Well, at the end of the evening, I knew I had to apologize to her. I was such a spoil sport at best, and I really apologized to her. It was genuine. I just said, that was so awful. I don't know where it came from. It's one of those times where you look at yourself and you go, was that just me? Yep, it was me. So we fast forward a little bit to this time of doing everything online. And this woman, again, somebody who brings so much to this church, has made the decision not to be virtually present for our book study, but to, there's other, whatever else she's doing. on Monday evenings felt that it would be deeper for her. I don't know. I didn't know any of that. What I see on this Zoom meeting is she's not there, she's not there, she's not there. So I wrote to her, hey, I've noticed you're missing. Yeah, she says beautifully. I just felt it was a time for me to do something else. I get a hold of that, and I'm saying to myself, I was so awful. I was utterly terrible. How could I expect her to forgive me? Of course she's never going to come back to a Kriya Satsang group where I'm there. I am the worst, and I'm supposed to be a leader? I'm the host of the group? I don't think so. No, I've probably ruined Kriya Satsang groups for her for the rest of her life. I was telling myself this. After about a week of that, I wrote her a letter. I said, I just need to apologize to you. I feel so terrible about that night. I went on and on. And she wrote me back in the lightest spirit. Oh, Shanti, you're adorable, she said. You already apologized for that. I already accepted it. I know who you are. She said to me, this has nothing to do with you. Ha, imagine that. Nothing to do with me. Try and tell my ego that. You see what happens? It's just failure, failure. Oh God, I'm so embarrassed. I can't even show you this failure. No. First of all, everybody sees everything. None of us are ever hiding from each other. Never mind from God himself. But remember that the ways that we judge ourselves, the ways that we hold ourselves, are often so much worse than our friends, our guru bhais, our family. They're not seeing us the way we are. They don't have that little bit of karma stuck right in that vritti that they're struggling with. We have it. But God, God would never judge us like that. God loves us unconditionally, and he's doing everything that he can do for us to show us this is the way back. If you fail, try again. That is a very important message here. That story of a master with the fishermen at Encinitas, where they had been out all day, they hadn't caught anything, and he notices, he sees what's going on. Of course, he's walking the beach, and he looks at them. He said, bad day, huh? Yeah. Go out one more time, he says. And they listened, which is amazing, which goes right back to this first way that Swamiji writes in this reading. Every state of consciousness has its own attractive power. Clearly, they were ready to succeed. Very important for us. Ready. They were not somehow energetically focused on the failure. So Master walks by and he says, try again. And of course they go out and they catch a boatload of fish. But all of these stories, every one of them, have these little messages for us about how we're finding our way back up. God is not judging. God is not punishing. There really is no such thing as failure. And go it again. Try it again. Master says it. We have to remember, we may not all be ready to cling to God alone. That's what the saints do. We may not actually be ready to love God with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength, but we can keep going. We can keep moving. We can say, look at that. I didn't make it this time. I'll give it one more go. A very funny story just came into my mind, so I have to take a couple of extra minutes and share it with you. When I used to sing the chant, I want only thee, Lord, thee, only thee. This came to mind when I was listening to the chant that Tandava did, how shall I love thee? I used to have this voice in the back of my mind that would say, you don't only want God, tell the truth. Here you are singing this chant. There's a lot of other things that you want. But I never told anybody about it. I was always like, I'm not going to say that out loud. I'm going to keep affirming, good thing to do. I want only thee, Lord, thee, only thee. One day I was listening to a talk, this is years ago now, that Dharmaraj in India was giving. He starts talking about this. It's like, oh my God, somebody else knows that? But he says, every time he would chant that line, I want only thee, Lord, thee, only thee, he said, he'd hear, liar, liar, pants on fire. It's very funny. We're all in the same boat. We're all making the best effort we can. We have to get out of our human mind whenever we can. Every thought we offer into the light is purified and strengthened over time. Give everything to God. He loves us. He's waiting for us. No matter how horrible the thought is, just give it to God. And we will find ourselves able to love God with all our hearts, minds, souls, and strength, and we'll realize our oneness there.